Chapter 23. Wolf Brother. From the start, Perrin knew the journey to Camelin was going to be far from comfortable, beginning with Egwene's insistence that they take turns riding Bella. They did not know how far it was, she said, but it was too far for her to be the only one who rode. Her jaw firmed and her eyes stared at him unblinking. I'm too big to ride Bella, he said. I'm used to walking and I'd rather.
And I'm not used to walking? Egwene said sharply.
That isn't what I...
I'm the only one who's supposed to get saddle sore, is that it?
And when you walk till your feet are ready to fall off, you'll expect me to look after you.
Let it be, he breathed when she looked like going on.
Anyway, you'll take the first turn. Her face turned even more stubborn, but he refused to let her get a word in edgewise. If you won't get in the saddle by yourself, I'll put you there. She gave him a startled look, and a small smile curved her lips.
In that case.
She sounded as if she were about to laugh, but she climbed up. He grumbled to himself as he turned away from the river. Leaders in stories never had to put up with this sort of thing. Egwene did insist on him taking his turns, and whenever he tried to avoid it, she bullied him into the saddle. Blacksmithing did not lend itself to a slender build, and Bella was not very large as horses went. Every time he put his foot in the stirrup, the shaggy mare looked at him with what he was sure was reproach. Small things, perhaps, but they irritated. Soon he flinched whenever Egwene announced,
It's your turn, Perrin.
In stories, leaders seldom flinched, and they were never bullied. But, he reflected, they never had to deal with Egwene, either. There were only short rations of bread and cheese to begin with, and what there was gave out by the end of the first day. Perrin set snares along likely rabbit runs. They looked old, but it was worth a chance. While Egwene began laying a fire. When he was done, he decided to try his hand with his sling before the light failed altogether. They had not seen a sign of anything at all alive, but, to his surprise, he jumped a scrawny rabbit almost at once. He was so surprised when it burst from under a bush right beneath his feet that it almost got away. But he fetched it at 40 paces, just as it was darting around a tree. When he came back to the camp with the rabbit, Egwene had broken limbs all laid for the fire, but she was kneeling beside the pile with her eyes closed. What are you doing? You can't wish a fire. Egwene gave a jump at his first words and twisted around to stare at him with a hand to her throat.
You startled me.
I was lucky, he said, holding up the rabbit. Get your flint and steel. We eat well tonight, at least.
I don't have a flint, she said slowly. It was in my pocket, and I lost it in the river.
Then how?
It was so easy back there on the riverbank, Perrin. Just the way Moraine said I showed me. I just reached out and...
She gestured as if grasping for something, then let her hand fall with a sigh.
I can't find it now.
Perrin licked his lips uneasily.
The power?
She nodded and he stared at her.
Are you crazy? I mean, the one power? You can't just play around with something like that.
It was so easy, Perrin. I can do it. I can channel the power.
He took a deep breath. I'll make a fire, Bo Egwene.
Promise you won't try this thing again.
I will not.
Her jaw firmed in a way that made him sigh.
Would you give up that axe of yours, Perrin Ebarra? Would you walk around with one hand tied behind your back? I won't do it.
I'll make the fire, Bo, he said wearily. At least don't try it again tonight. Please? She acquiesced grudgingly, and even after the rabbit was roasting on a spit over the flames, he had the feeling she felt she could have done it better. She would not give up trying either, every night, though the best she ever did was a trickle of smoke that vanished almost immediately. Her eyes dared him to say a word, and he wisely kept his mouth shut. After that one hot meal, they subsisted on coarse, wild tubers and a few young shoots. With still no sign of spring, none of it was plentiful, and none of it was tasty either. Neither complained, but not a meal passed without one or the other sighing regretfully, and they both knew it was for the tang of a bit of cheese, or even the smell of bread. A find of mushrooms, Queen's Crowns, the best, one afternoon in a shady part of the forest was enough to seem a great treat. They gobbled them down, laughing and telling stories from back in Emmons Field. Stories that began, "Do you remember when?" But the mushrooms did not last long, and neither did the laughter. There was little mirth in hunger. Whichever was walking carried a sling, ready to let fly at the sight of a rabbit or squirrel. But the only time either hurled a stone was in frustration. The snares they set so carefully each evening yielded nothing at dawn. And they did not dare stay a day in one place to leave the snares out. Neither of them knew how far it was to Camelin, and neither would feel safe until they got there, if then. Perrin began to wonder if his stomach could shrink enough to make a hole all the way through his middle. They made good time, as he saw it, but as they got farther and farther from the Arunel without seeing a village or even a farmhouse where they could ask directions, his doubts about his own plan grew. Egwene continued to appear outwardly as confident as when they set out, but he was sure that sooner or later she would say it would have been better to risk the Trollocs than to wander around lost for the rest of their lives. She never did, but he kept expecting it. 2 days from the river, the land changed to thickly forested hills, as gripped by the tail end of winter as everywhere else, and a day after that the hills flattened out again, the dense forest broken by glades, often a mile or more across. Snow still lay in hidden hollows, and the air was brisk of a morning, and the wind cold always. Nowhere did they see a road, or a plowed field, or chimney smoke in the distance, or any other sign of human habitation. At least, none where men still dwelt. Once the remains of tall stone ramparts encircled a hilltop. Parts of roofless stone houses stood inside the fallen circle. The forest had long swallowed it. Trees grew right through everything, and spider webs of old creeper enveloped the big stone blocks. Another time they came on a stone tower, broken-topped and brown with old moss, leaning on the huge oak whose thick roots were slowly toppling it. But they found no place where men had breathed in living remembrance. Memories of Shadar Logoth kept them away from the ruins and hurried their footsteps until they were once more deep in places that seemed never to have known a human footstep. Dreams plagued Perrin's sleep, fearful dreams. Baal Zemon was in them, chasing him through mazes, hunting him, but Perrin never met him face to face, so far as he remembered. And their journey had been enough to bring a few bad dreams. Egwene complained of nightmares about Shadar Logoth, especially the 2 nights after they found the ruined fort and the abandoned tower. Perrin kept his own counsel, even when he woke sweating and shaking in the dark. She was looking to him to lead them safely to Camelin, not share worries about which they could do nothing. He was walking at Bella's head, wondering if they would find anything to eat this evening, when he first caught the smell. The mare flared her nostrils and swung her head in the next moment. He seized her bridle before she could wick her.
"That's smoke," Egwene said excitedly.
She leaned forward in the saddle, drew a deep breath.
"A cook fire. Somebody is roasting dinner. Rabbit."
"Maybe," Perrin said cautiously, and her eager smile faded. He exchanged his sling for the wicked half-moon of the axe. His hands opened and closed uncertainly on the thick haft. It was a weapon, but neither his hidden practice behind the forge nor Lan's teaching had really prepared him to use it as one. Even the battle before Shadar Logoth was too vague in his mind to give him any confidence. He could never quite manage that void that Rand in the water talked about, either. Sunlight slanted through the trees behind them, and the forest was a still mass of dappled shadows. The faint smell of wood smoke drifted around them, tinged with the aroma of cooking meat. It could be rabbit, he thought, and his stomach grumbled. And it could be something else, he reminded himself. He looked at Egwene. She was watching him. There were responsibilities to being leader.
"Wait here," he said softly.
She frowned, but he cut her off as she opened her mouth.
"And be quiet. We don't know who it is yet."
She nodded. Reluctantly, but she did it. Perrin wondered why that did not work when he was trying to make her take his turn riding. Drawing a deep breath, he started for the source of the smoke. He had not spent as much time in the forests around Emmons Field as Rand or Matt, but still he had done his share of hunting rabbits. He crept from tree to tree without so much as snapping a twig. It was not long before he was peering around the bole of a tall oak with spreading serpentine limbs that bent to touch the ground, then rose again. Beyond lay a campfire, and a lean, sun-browned man was leaning against one of the limbs not far from the flames. At least he was not a Trolloc, but he was the strangest fellow Perrin had ever seen. For one thing, his clothes all seemed to be made from animal skins, with the fur still on. Even his boots and the odd, flat-topped round cap on his head. His cloak was a crazy quilt of rabbit and squirrel. His trousers appeared to be made from the long-haired hide of a brown and white goat. Gathered at the back of his neck with a cord, his graying brown hair hung to his waist. A thick beard fanned across half his chest. A long knife hung at his belt, almost a sword, and a bow and quiver stood propped against a limb close to hand. The man leaned back with his eyes closed, apparently asleep, but Perrin did not stir from his concealment. Six sticks slanted over the fellow's fire, and on each stick a rabbit was skewered, roasted brown, and now and then dripping juice that hissed in the flames. The smell of them, so close, made his mouth water. "You're done drooling." The man opened one eye and cocked it at Perrin's hiding place. "You and your friend might as well sit and have a bite. I haven't seen you eat much the last couple of days." Perrin hesitated, then stood slowly, still gripping his axe tightly. "You've been watching me for 2 days?" The man chuckled deep in his throat. "Yes, I've been watching you. And that pretty girl. Pushes you around like a bantam rooster, doesn't she? Heard you mostly. The horse is the only one of you doesn't trample around loud enough to be heard 5 miles off. You going to ask her in? Or are you intending to eat all the rabbit yourself?" Perrin bristled. He knew he did not make much noise. You could not get close enough to a rabbit in the Waterwood to fetch it with a sling if you made noise. But the smell of rabbit made him remember that Egwene was hungry too, not to mention waiting to discover if it was a Trolloc fire they had smelled. He slipped the haft of his axe through the belt loop and raised his voice.
"Egwene, it's all right. It is rabbit."
Offering his hand, he added in a more normal tone,
"My name is Perrin, Perrin Ebarra."
The man considered his hand before taking it awkwardly, as if unused to shaking hands.
"I'm called Elias," he said, looking up. "Elias Machira."
Perrin gasped and nearly dropped Elias's hand. The man's eyes were yellow, like bright polished gold. Some memory tickled at the back of Perrin's mind, then fled. All he could think of right then was that all of the Trolloc's eyes he had seen had been almost black. Egwene appeared, cautiously leading Bella. She tied the mare's reins to one of the smaller branches of the oak and made polite sounds when Perrin introduced her to Elias, but her eyes kept drifting to the rabbits. She did not seem to notice the man's eyes. When Elias motioned them to the food, she fell to with a will. Perrin hesitated only a minute longer before joining her. Elias waited silently while they ate. Perrin was so hungry he tore off pieces of meat so hot he had to juggle them from hand to hand before he could hold them in his mouth. Even Egwene showed little of her usual neatness. Greasy juice ran down her chin. Day faded into twilight before they began to slow down, moonless darkness closing in around the fire, and then Elias spoke.
"What are you doing out here? There isn't a house inside 50 miles in any direction."
"We're going to Camelin," Egwene said. "Perhaps you could—"
Her eyes lifted coolly as Elias threw back his head and roared with laughter. Perrin stared at him, a rabbit leg half raised to his mouth.
"Camelin!"
Elias wheezed when he could talk again. The path you were following, the line you've taken the last 2 days, you'll pass 100 miles or more north of Camelon.
We were going to ask directions, Egwene said defensively. We just haven't found any villages or farms yet.
And none you will, Elias said, chuckling. The way you're going, you can travel all the way to the spine of the world without seeing another human. Of course, if you manage to climb the spine, it can be done, some places. You could find people in the Aiel Waste, but you wouldn't like it there. You'd broil by day and freeze by night and die of thirst any time. It takes an Aielman to find water in the waste. And they don't like strangers much. No, not much, I'd say. He set off into another, more furious burst of laughter, this time actually rolling on the ground.
Not much at all, he managed.
Perrin shifted uneasily. Are we eating with a madman? Egwene frowned, but she waited until Elias's mirth faded a little, then said, Perhaps you could show us the way. You seem to know a good deal more about where places are than we do. Elias stopped laughing. Raising his head, he replaced his round fur cap, which had fallen off while he was rolling about, and stared at her from under lowered brows.
I don't much like people, he said in a flat voice. Cities are full of people. I don't go near villages or even farms very often. Villagers, farmers, they don't like my friends. I wouldn't even have helped you if you hadn't been stumbling around as helpless and innocent as newborn cubs.
But at least you can tell us which way to go, she insisted. If you direct us to the nearest village, even if it's 50 miles away, surely they'll give us directions to Camelon.
Be still, Elias said. My friends are coming.
Bella suddenly whinnied in fear and began jerking to pull her reins free. Perrin half rose as shapes appeared all around them in the darkening forest. Bella reared and twisted, screaming.
Quiet the mare, Elias said. They won't hurt her. Or you, if you're still.
4 wolves stepped into the firelight, shaggy, waist-high forms, with jaws that could break a man's leg. As if the people were not there, they walked up to the fire and laid down between the humans. In the darkness among the trees, firelight reflected off the eyes of more wolves on all sides. Yellow eyes, Perrin thought, like Elias's. That was what he had been trying to remember. Carefully watching the wolves among them, he reached for his axe.
I would not do that, Elias said. If they think you mean harm, they'll stop being friendly.
They were staring at him, those 4 wolves, Perrin saw. He had the feeling that all the wolves, those in the trees as well, were staring at him. It made his skin itch. Cautiously, he moved his hands away from the axe. He imagined he could feel the tension ease among the wolves. Slowly, he sat back down. His hands shook until he gripped his knees to stop them. Egwene was so stiff she almost quivered. One wolf, close to black with a lighter gray patch on his face, lay nearly touching her. Bella had ceased her screaming and rearing. Instead, she stood trembling and shifting in an attempt to keep all of the wolves in view, kicking occasionally to show the wolves that she could, intending to sell her life dearly. The wolves seemed to ignore her and everyone else. Tongues lolling out of their mouths, they waited at their ease.
There, Elias said. That's better.
Are they tame? Egwene asked faintly, and hopefully, too. They're pets?
Elias snorted. Wolves don't tame, girl. Not even as well as men. They're my friends. We keep each other company. Hunt together, converse, after a fashion. Just like any friends. Isn't that right, Dapple?
A wolf with fur that faded through 12 shades of gray, dark and light, turned her head to look at him.
You talk to them? Perrin marveled. It isn't exactly talking, Elias replied slowly. The words don't matter, and they aren't exactly right either. Her name isn't Dapple. It's something that means the way shadows play on a forest pool at a midwinter dawn, with the breeze rippling the surface, and the tang of ice when the water touches the tongue, and a hint of snow before nightfall in the air. But that isn't quite it either. You can't say it in words. It's more of a feeling. That's the way wolves talk. The others are Burn, Hopper, and Wind. Burn had an old scar on his shoulder that might explain his name, but there was nothing about the other two wolves to give any indication of what their names might mean. For all the man's gruffness, Perrin thought Elias was pleased to have the chance to talk to another human. He seemed eager enough to do it, at least. Perrin eyed the wolf's teeth glistening in the firelight and thought it might be a good idea to keep him talking.
How did you learn to talk to wolves, Elias?
They found out, Elias replied. I didn't. Not at first. That's always the way of it, I understand. The wolves find you, not you them. Some people thought me touched by the Dark One, because wolves started appearing wherever I went. I suppose I thought so too, sometimes. Most decent folk began to avoid me, and the ones who sought me out weren't the kind I wanted to know one way or another. Then I noticed there were times when the wolves seemed to know what I was thinking, to respond to what was in my head. That was the real beginning. They were curious about me. Wolves can sense people, usually, but not like this. They were glad to find me. They say it's been a long time since they hunted with men. And when they say a long time, the feeling I get is like a cold wind howling all the way down from the first day.
I never heard of men hunting with wolves, Egwene said.
Her voice was not entirely steady, but the fact that the wolves were just lying there seemed to give her heart. If Elias heard her, he gave no sign.
Wolves remember things differently from the way people do, he said.
His strange eyes took on a faraway look as if he were drifting off on the flow of memory himself.
Every wolf remembers the history of all wolves, or at least the shape of it. Like I said, it can't be put into words very well. They remember running down prey side by side with men. But it was so long ago that it's more like the shadow of a shadow than a memory.
That's very interesting, Egwene said, and Elias looked at her sharply. No, I mean it. It is.
She wet her lips.
Could you teach us to talk to them?
Elias snorted again.
It can't be taught. Some can do it, some can't. They say he can.
He pointed at Perrin. Perrin looked at Elias's finger as if it were a knife.
He really is a madman.
The wolves were staring at him again. He shifted uncomfortably.
You say you're going to Camelin, Elias said. But that still doesn't explain what you're doing out here, days from anywhere.
He tossed back his fur patch cloak and lay down on his side, propped on one elbow and waiting expectantly. Perrin glanced at Egwene. Early on, they concocted a story for when they found people to explain where they were going without bringing them any trouble, without letting anyone know where they were really from or where they were really going, eventually. Who knew what careless word might reach a fade's ear? They had worked on it every day, patching it together, honing out flaws. And they had decided Egwene was the one to tell it. She was better with words than he was, and she claimed she could always tell when he was lying by his face. Egwene began at once, smoothly. They were from the north, from Saldea, from farms outside a tiny village. Neither of them had been more than 20 miles from home in their whole lives before this. But they had heard Gleeman's stories and merchants' tales, and they wanted to see some of the world. Camelin and Ilion. The Sea of Storms, and maybe even the fabled islands of the Sea Folk. Perrin listened with satisfaction. Not even Tom Marilyn could have made a better tale from the little they knew of the world outside the two rivers, or one better suited to their needs.
From Soldeia, eh?
Elias said when she was done.
Perrin nodded. That's right. We thought about seeing Maradon first. I'd surely like to see the king. But the capital city would be the first place our fathers would look.
That was his part of it, to make it plain they had never been to Maradon. That way no one would expect them to know anything about the city, just in case they ran into someone who really had been there. It was all a long way from Emmons Field and the events of Winter Night. Nobody hearing the tale would have any reason to think of Tar Valon or Aes Sedai.
Quite a story, Elias nodded. Yes, quite a story. There's a few things wrong with it, but the main thing is, Dapple says it's all a lump of lies. Every last word.
Lies, Egwene exclaimed. Why would we lie?
The four wolves had not moved, but they no longer seemed to be just lying there around the fire. They crouched instead, and their yellow eyes watched the Emmons Fielders without blinking. Perrin did not say anything, but his hand strayed to the axe at his waist. The four wolves rose to their feet in one quick movement, and his hand froze. They made no sound, but the thick hackles on their necks stood erect. One of the wolves back under the trees raised a growling howl into the night. Others answered, 5, 10, 20, till the darkness rippled with them. Abruptly, they too were still. Cold sweat trickled down Perrin's face.
If you think...
Egwene stopped to swallow. Despite the chill in the air, there was sweat on her face, too.
If you think we're lying, then you'll probably prefer that we make our own camp for the night away from yours.
Ordinarily I would, girl. But right now I want to know about the Trollocs and the Half-Men.
Perrin struggled to keep his face impassive and hoped he was doing better at it than Egwene. Elias went on in a conversational tone.
Dapple says she smelled Half-Men and Trollocs in your minds while you were telling that fool story. They all did. You're mixed up with Trollocs somehow, and the Eyeless. Wolves hate Trollocs and Half-Men worse than wildfire, worse than anything. And so do I. Byrne wants to be done with you. It was Trollocs gave him that mark when he was a yearling. He says game is scarce and you're fatter than any deer he's seen in months, and we should be done with you. But Byrne is always impatient. Why don't you tell me about it? I hope you're not dark friends. I don't like killing people after I've fed them. Just remember, they'll know if you lie. And even Dapple is already near as upset as Byrne.
His eyes, as yellow as the wolves' eyes, blinked no more than theirs did.
They are a wolf's eyes, Perrin thought.
Egwene was looking at him, he realized, waiting for him to decide what they should do.
Light, suddenly I'm the leader again.
They had decided from the first that they could not risk telling the real story to anyone, but he saw no chance for them to get away, even if he managed to get his axe out before... Dapple growled deep in her throat, and the sound was taken up by the other three around the fire, then by the wolves in the darkness. The menacing rumble filled the night.
All right, Perrin said quickly. All right!
The growling cut off, sharp and sudden. Egwene unclenched her hands and nodded.
It all started a few days before Winter Night, Perrin began, when our friend Matt saw a man in a black cloak.
Elias never changed his expression or the way he lay on his side, but there was something about the tilt of his head that spoke of ears pricking up. The four wolves sat down as Perrin went on. He had the impression they were listening too. The story was a long one, and he told almost all of it. The dream he and the others had had in Bearlawn, though, he kept to himself. He waited for the wolves to make some sign that they had caught the omission, but they only watched. Dapple seemed friendly, Byrne angry. He was hoarse by the time he finished.
And if she doesn't find us in Camelin, we'll go on to Tar Valon. We don't have any choice except to get help from the Aes Sedai.
Trollocs and Half-Men this far south, Elias mused. Now that's something to consider.
He rooted behind him and tossed Perrin a hide water bag, not really looking at him. He appeared to be thinking. He waited until Perrin had drunk and replaced the plug before he spoke again.
I don't hold with Aes Sedai. The Red Aja, those that like hunting for men who mess with the One Power, they wanted to gentle me once. I told them to their faces they were Black Aja. Serve the Dark One, I said. And they didn't like that at all. They couldn't catch me, though, once I got into the forest. But they did try. Yes, they did. Come to that, I doubt any Aes Sedai would take kindly to me after that. I had to kill a couple of warders. Bad business, that, killing warders. Don't like it.
This talking to wolves, Perrin said uneasily. It has to do with the power?
Of course not, Elias growled. Wouldn't have worked on me, gentling, but it made me mad them wanting to try. This is an old thing, boy. Older than Aes Sedai. Older than anybody using the One Power. Old as humankind. Old as wolves. They don't like that either, Aes Sedai. Old things coming again. I'm not the only one. There are other things, other folk. Makes Aes Sedai nervous, makes them mutter about ancient barriers weakening. Things are breaking apart, they say. They're afraid the Dark One will get loose, is what. You'd think I was to blame the way some of them looked at me. Red Aja, anyway, but some others, too. The Ammerlin Seat. Yah! I keep clear of them, mostly, and clear of friends of Aes Sedai as well. You will, too, if you're smart.
I'd like nothing better than to stay away from Aes Sedai, Perrin said. Egwene gave him a sharp look. He hoped she would not burst out that she wanted to be an Aes Sedai.
But she said nothing, though her mouth tightened and Perrin went on.
It isn't as if we have a choice. We've had Trollocs chasing us and Fades and Drakkar. Everything but Dark Friends. We can't hide and we can't fight back alone. So who is going to help us? Who else is strong enough except Aes Sedai?
Elias was silent for a time, looking at the wolves, most often at Dapple or Burn. Perrin shifted nervously and tried not to watch. When he watched, he had the feeling that he could almost hear what Elias and the wolves were saying to one another. Even if it had nothing to do with the power, he wanted no part of it.
He had to be making some crazy joke. I can't talk to wolves.
One of the wolves, Hopper, he thought, looked at him and seemed to grin. He wondered how he had put a name to him.
You could stay with me, Elias said finally. With us.
Egwene's eyebrows shot up and Perrin's mouth dropped open.
Well, what could be safer? Elias challenged. Trollocs will take any chance they get to kill a wolf by itself, but they'll go miles out of their way to avoid a pack. And you won't have to worry about Aes Sedai either. They don't often come into these woods.
I don't know.
Perrin avoided looking at the wolves to either side of him. One was Dapple, and he could feel her eyes on him.
For one thing, it isn't just the Trollocs.
Elias chuckled coldly.
I've seen a pack pull down one of the Eyeless, too. Lost half the pack, but they wouldn't give up once they had it sent. Trollocs, Murdral, it's all one to the wolves. It's you they really want, boy. They've heard of other men who can talk to wolves, but you're the first they've ever met besides me. They'll accept your friend, too, though, and you'll all be safer here than in any city. There's Dark Friends in cities.
Listen, Perrin said urgently. I wish you'd stop saying that. I can't do that. What you do, what you're saying.
As you wish, boy. Play the goat if you've a mind to. Don't you want to be safe?
I am not deceiving myself. There's nothing to deceive myself about. All we want... We are going to Camelin, Egwene spoke up firmly, and then to Tar Valon.
Closing his mouth, Perrin met her angry look with one of his own. He knew that she followed his lead when she wanted to, and not when she did not. But she could at least let him answer for himself.
What about you, Perrin? He said, and answered himself.
Me? Well, let me think. Yes, yes, I think I'll go on.
He turned a mild smile on her.
Well, Egwene, that makes both of us. I guess I'm going with you at that. Good to talk these things out before making a decision, isn't it?
She blushed, but the set of her jaw never lessened. Elias grunted.
Dapple said that's what you'd decide. She said the girl's planted firmly in the human world while you, he nodded at Perrin, stand halfway between. Under the circumstances, I suppose we'd better go south with you. Otherwise, you'll probably starve to death or get lost or...
Abruptly, Byrne stood up, and Elias turned his head to regard the big wolf. After a moment, Dapple rose too. She moved closer to Elias so that she also was meeting Byrne's stare. The tableau was frozen for long minutes. Then Byrne whirled and vanished into the night. Dapple shook herself, then resumed her place, flopping down as if nothing had happened. Elias met Perrin's questioning eyes.
Dapple runs this pack, he explained. Some of the males could best her if they challenged, but she's smarter than any of them, and they all know it. She saved the pack more than once. But Byrne thinks the pack is wasting time with you three. Hating Trollocs is about all there is to him. And if there are Trollocs this far south, he wants to be off killing them.
We quite understand, Egwene said, sounding relieved. We really can find our own way. With some directions, of course, if you'll give them.
Elias waved a hand.
I said Dapple leads this pack, didn't I? In the morning, I'll start south with you, and so will they.
Egwene looked as if that was not the best news she could have heard. Perrin sat wrapped in his own silence. He could feel Byrne leaving. And the scarred male was not the only one. A dozen others, all young males, loped after him. He wanted to believe it was all Elias playing in his imagination, but he could not. Just before the departing wolves faded from his mind, he felt a thought he knew came from Byrne, as sharp and clear as if it were his own thought. Hatred. Hatred and the taste of blood.